end it after the shove it, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. I'm already grinning because it's going to be a fun and interesting one today. And who saw this coming on a fine Monday afternoon? Well, maybe some people did, maybe they didn't. Lee, how are you, mate? Are you excited for this discussion that's about to take place?
I'm definitely excited for the discussion. It's hard sitting at your desk when all you want to do is talk football for the whole afternoon. Like, zero work has been done, absolutely zero. Don't know if it was expected, but yeah, this should be fun.
It should be fun one. Si, how are you, mate? You're all right?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yes, like you, Lee, very little work done this afternoon. In fact, I was on a phone call when the news broke with Football America. So watch this space for that news coming in the next few weeks. And I said to him, oh, Brian Flores has been sacked, and I couldn't really concentrate on the call after that. So.
You don't know what you've agreed to.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I was also on a call and I just said the same thing, and they were like, just the look of just don't know who that is, don't care. And I was like, right, come on, focus in on the meeting. But it has happened. Brian Flores is gone. 3 seasons with the Dolphins. 2 winning seasons, that the first time we've gone back-to-back winning seasons for quite some time, if I'm correct, and a bit of a shock, fair to say. Wouldn't you think, Lee, or, you know, did you see this one coming?
Definitely not. I mean, I was even on record on the podcast earlier in the year saying I wouldn't have sacked him after 1-7. I must say, I heard some stuff in the last few days that makes it far less surprising. I don't know. I think I could easily sit here and make a very good case for why he should be sacked and equally why he shouldn't be sacked. I'd love to know how many coaches win 8 of their last 9 games and are getting sacked the day after the season ends. So I imagine that's a very small group that he's become a part of. But hey, let's say there's a lot more to it than simply results and performance on the field. I think that, you know, this is deeper than that. It's not as simple as what we saw yesterday or the week before is why he got sacked. I think it's, you know, like it always is. It's always more than just the surface stuff.
That's it. And Si, your immediate reaction? We'll get into the whys and why nots in a minute. So what's your immediate take?
Lightly, very surprised at the timing of it. They say it's Black Monday for a reason, but I didn't expect Brian Flores to be part of that, to be fair, considering the 7-game winning streak they've had recently. I thought that run would have at least saved his job, if not somebody else's. I mean, like Lee says, it's not all about results. It's not always a results-driven business because of what Stephen Ross has said in terms of Brian Flores building relationships. Having said that, though, I wonder, would we be sitting here discussing this tonight if they'd have beaten the Jags in London and the Falcons in the week after, and they'd be getting a playoff spot secured? I don't think we would be, would we? So maybe he is being made a scapegoat for not getting a playoff berth in the 3 years he's been coach.
I do think we would still have been having that conversation post playoff knockout or Super Bowl win. Super Bowl win, I think, is the only thing that saves you, because I think some of the stuff you're starting to hear come out, and say some of the stuff that we heard in the last week, is pretty toxic, and it's just far deeper than the results. I don't think it's enough to just hang it on the results, because I think if you were Brian Flores and you were on the phone to Stephen Ross or in a meeting with him this morning, obviously Ross was in Miami, like I think I could make a fairly compelling argument why I should be able to keep my job off the back of those wins, being close, like even in those games. It's funny, the London game is the only game that was a close loss that I still feel like I'm not as upset as I should be with, because of the state of the defense literally hours before the game. It wasn't like you had a week build up to that. I mean, I watched some of those guys practice with you on the Friday, And then all of a sudden they were gone Sunday. We were waiting to go into the stadium when we saw the inactives come out, and it's like mind blown. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think with some of the stuff that's come out, this is probably likely to happen regardless of whether we had actually got into the playoffs or not.
And that stuff you're referring to, obviously some of it you've been told in advance, but it's all sort of on social media now, so I think we're okay to kind of mention most of it, aren't we? So it's stuff like sort of belittling Tour in the locker room over the last couple of weeks after performances, kind of arguing with Tour. We've heard several like key players who were kind of out of contract this year, like dubious about coming back because of the locker room culture. All this sort of thing seems to be coming together. And what struck me immediately was kind of like, you don't see it on the surface, but that's because it's quite like, in terms of, there aren't really any sort of superstars in that locker room, the ones that you pull out and say, NFL-wide superstar here. And thus, it's often perceived as quite a close-knit group, like them against the world sort of thing, but you don't really see what's happening in the locker room at all times. Obviously, we've had the pandemic, so access to the locker room hasn't been as it once would have been. So these sort of things haven't really come out until like the last few days and weeks and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. And you wonder how long, if that is the case, how long that has been going on for. Is it just over the course of the last couple of weeks? Or are we talking sort of, Flores sort of setting up to be that sort of like hostile environment in terms of, motivation and stuff like that? Simon, what do you think, mate? Do you think this is like a recent thing, or do you think like, this is the natural conclusion after a long period of time?
We talked about it on the pod before, in that Flores doesn't seem to like the alpha male in the dressing room. Van Noy was a perfect example of that. And he's obviously since gone to New England. And I think if he is challenged in the dressing room or players don't buy into his ideas, then he's very stubborn in being flexible. And I think that is now becoming apparent in the comments that are coming out on social media in terms of him finding it difficult to build relationships with certain position groups or certain coaching staff. And I think that's just a way of showing how he has struggled in the dressing room behind the scenes, even though on the surface it seems as though it's that tight unit, as you say, Andy.
And on the flip side, the performances haven't been that bad, have they? I mean, they certainly haven't been bad over the last 9 weeks, with the exception of the Titans game. And that's why, I mean, my first reaction was, of course, disappointment, because for me, even though we started 1-7 this year, you could see that he'd got it in him to turn it around. You could see that, like, the defense especially, which is his forte, has been outstanding. And then it's like, so it's kind of like, things must, if this is the reason, because of the souring of relationships, which a lot of sources are now saying is the case, this must have been really bad to overrule the fact that he's got the team performing on the field. Lee?
I think you're right. The way the defense has played, especially the last, 9 games, has been absolutely outstanding. But it was so close to the way they played last year. The question has to be, someone explain to me why he allowed it to go on for so long, not performing that way. Because he has to own that as well. You know, essentially, if this defense had played that way all year long, let's be honest, we're possibly the number 2 seed in the AFC. Because this defense was good enough to carry this team when they were playing bad, and certainly good enough to carry them when Jacoby Brissett was starting. And I think, I applaud Ross for being able to set aside the recency bias of winning yesterday and winning a bunch of games in the last few weeks and being close to the playoffs and being able to, I think, see the bigger picture. But, you know, this is super out of character for Steve Ross. Let's be honest. It's always been a year late that a firing has been. It's always been the grumblings have started a year before. As fans, we're kind of, by the time it happens, everyone is completely on board. But this time it's come early and it feels out of character, but it also feels like maybe he's learned from some of those past mistakes, that there's a roster here that's capable of winning. Do we want to risk losing that? Because at the end of next year, let's be honest, this team could look very different.
I also think there's an element of Stephen Ross becoming a little bit desperate to get that championship because, let's face it, time's not on his side. He's an old man, albeit an active old man. So as each season passes, that's another year without a championship. So you have to wonder whether he's got that at the back of his mind as well.
It's a very interesting debate, isn't it? But I guess let's take it back a step then. And we've kind of sprang into this as if we know that it was right that Flores is gone. But like, let me get your answer just to the simple question. Are you pleased that Flores is gone? What do you reckon to that one, Lee?
So I said earlier in the season, I said to start this podcast, I was on board with keeping Flores. If he hadn't been sacked, I wouldn't have been any more upset right now than I am now with him being fired. But I also said, if it came down to keeping the quarterback or keeping the coach, that I'm keeping the quarterback. And I stand by that now. Regardless of how it pans out, that's where I want this team to be in the right place. I want them to figure out, you know, we sat here on the podcast at the beginning of the year, we said, what are the goals for this season? And the biggest goals were the playoffs, to find out if Tua is the guy, and you failed at both. And finding out if Tua is the guy is the most egregious in my book, because that was an absolute necessity. And again, part of the reason why is not only did Steve Ross have to watch this team play unprepared and really quite badly in Tennessee, he had to watch a guy that he has paid an awful lot of money to get a bye week and go into the playoffs with the number one seed without Derrick Henry for a number of weeks. It's not just Derrick Henry. You know, yes, I can accept all the game manager stuff and stuff like that, but he's also the number one seed in the UFC, and he contributed to that, whether it was not throwing interceptions or whatever. He's there. And I think that's, if you're sitting in a, if you're playing the equivalent of fantasy football, but with a real football team, that's got to be a bitter pill to swallow.
It has. Si, same sort of question to you. I mean, like, are you happy now you've heard what's going on, or more time?
I wouldn't say pleased is the right word, to be honest. I think we recognised there was a need for change. I think pleased is definitely not the right word. I think he has done good, especially with the defence over the last 3 years, that I'm not sure whoever comes in will enable that defensive unit to reach those levels again, because he was a defensive-minded coach, of course. So we may lose something on that side of the ball, but on the flip side, he clearly wasn't offensive-minded. So you'd like to think the new coach that comes in would help develop that side of the ball. So I think it's too early to acknowledge whether that was the right decision in my eyes. I think only time will tell there in terms of who they hire as his replacement, what his coaching staff looks like, which direction they want to take the quarterback position. There's so many open-ended questions at the moment that need answering before I can work out whether that's the right decision or not from my perspective.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable and kind of, I said to you guys before I came on, like, I don't know what to think. And I think you've said exactly, you know, you've articulated why that is because, you know, it could turn around next year and go like 13 and whatever and qualify for the playoffs, great. But if we take that big step back and we're kind of like losing record next year, I mean, Stephen Ross is going to be sat there maybe thinking this is an awful decision. And then lots of people, sort of national media outside of the Dolphins beat, are kind of saying this is a terrible decision that's going to set the Dolphins back a long time, and this is what bad organisations do. And I know they're all kind of soundbites for the sake of soundbites, but there's a few like interesting takes in there, you know, like this is tear it down, start again after 3 years of positivity. I mean, Lee, you're shaking your head. Come and tell us why.
The more we get involved and do things like doing this podcast and things like that, the more I come to realize that when it comes to the national media, they see such a small amount of what the team is and what the direction is, that it's based off winning a Monday night game and a Thursday night game, because that's the only times they see them. And I think a lot of it for me has come off, you know, especially a lot of the really bad commentary there's been on this team this year, you know, where people have clearly not seen anything outside of the box score, and that's what's formed their opinion. And it's the same when you argue with, not argue, when you have a debate about the quarterback with somebody who's not a Dolphins fan. They see such a little amount to make an informed opinion that I don't know if it's, obviously they're entitled to that opinion, but I don't know if that's worth giving too much credit to. I don't always like what the beat say, but let's be honest, the beat are around the team every day and only have one focus. And I think it's probably far more, it's probably a far better idea to kind of follow a little bit more the sort of stuff you hear from there than the national media. That, obviously, that's just my perspective, but, you know, we had, you know, we had things in the last couple of weeks, like commentary teams not knowing Duke Johnson had played for the team. Like, there's just no excusing some of that stuff. But then they're the people that are forming the opinion that Flores shouldn't be sacked. Well, yeah, that's because what you're actually looking at is the recent winning streak, back-to-back winning seasons, and you're not looking at anything under the surface. And that's what we're saying here is, on the surface, this looks like it could be a crazy decision. But if you start to dig a little deeper, then it, you know, you don't have to connect too many dots to say, okay, I can see why this has happened, even if I don't agree or necessarily wouldn't have done it myself. I can see how we've arrived at this point.
You only have to look at what happened in Jacksonville with Urban Meyer, where the relationship breakdown between him and his players was actually, a lot of it was in the public domain. So therefore, people were able to get an accurate reflection of of the poor culture in Jacksonville, where I would argue the opposite was the case in Miami. You don't seem to hear a lot about what goes on behind the four walls, and that's a deliberate policy of theirs, isn't it, in terms of sharing information or lack of information that comes out.
Yeah, we said earlier in the chat that, like, that the purposeful lack of information or disinformation that is put out there, like, no one truly knows what's actually wrong with Will Fuller, what he had done, why he was close to coming back but never came back. No one ever knew really what happened to Preston Williams last year, when every week he was coming back but never came back. You know, it's in that regard, I think that's a good thing, because you're keeping everything internal. Like, if there's been problems, it's not leaked into, you know, this season could have descended into chaos really easily. But from the outside, they always look like there was at least a togetherness and a cohesion, and, you know, at least they're fighting for Flores, and that's great. And everyone was doing their job, because that's what professionals should do. You don't have to like your colleagues, but you have to do the job and be professional. And I think that definitely happened. And like Simon pointed out, the perfect example is Jacksonville of what not to do. Do you know what I mean?
In many respects.
Exactly. You know, but we could easily have been that team. We were that team when we got beat by them. We were close to it.
Shambles. Interestingly, I put out a tweet yesterday, as in Sunday, asking whether Flores would be the head coach of the Dolphins for week one of the 2022 season. And 76% of people said yes. So that was a quick turnaround, wasn't it? That's life comes at you quick. Go on.
It's definitely been really interesting to see a lot of the fans and stuff. And, you know, I listen to a lot of Dolphins focused podcasts. We obviously do it here, and we've asked a question here. Do we think Flores should be sacked? Do we think he'd be the coach? Plenty of people said yes, but today are completely shocked that it's happened. And it's funny how that changes off the back of a couple of wins. Do you know what I mean? I think
that's crazy. Me, to be fair. I mean, early in the season, I was like, you can't come back from this. And I was then sort of... I'm still in two minds, because he came back from it, and then he still got fired anyway, which must be the most demoralising thing in the world for him. But I think he's going to go and get another head coaching job, isn't he? Sorry, Si, go on.
If you think you need to put out a tweet tonight saying to vote whether you think Chris Greer is going to be general manager on week one of the season, and then perhaps maybe tomorrow he'll go as well.
That's it. That is it. That is the Midas touch, I think I'll call it. But a question for you, Si, as well. I mean, given what we've heard about locker room and, well, what we're starting to hear about locker room and kind of, you know, information that's being passed around and stuff, it's quite surprising to me that, like, there's quite a number of players that are coming out and saying, you know, this is a shock. Thanks so much for everything you've done for me, coach, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, the flip side of that is the fact that I haven't seen any of the sort of major players come out and say that. It's a lot of the sort of, it's your Nick Needhams and that kind of people who are kind of, you know, not on the edge of the roster, but they're kind of squad players. But yeah, what's your take on that? And do you think it's kind of just reflective of, yeah, fundamental differences with some of the key players?
I mean, he's not going to have fundamental differences with all 53, is he? I mean, it's a big squad. So there are some players who would be grateful for the opportunity to play for the Dolphins in the NFL. And as you say, those are the types of players that will be not your star players, but would be your squad players, if you like. And if they are facing an uncertain future, now the coach has gone and he was the one that brought them onto the team, maybe they need to be seen to be not controversial, if you like, if they want to continue with the team or look for or even put themselves in the shop window for a job elsewhere. So it's, interestingly, Devontae Parker was a bit of the opposite on an Instagram post from what I think you shared it, didn't you, Lee? Or was it who shared it earlier?
Someone put it in the group.
Yeah, he seemed to be quite blunt around his opinions of Flores. So you're always going to get different opinions in a 53-man roster. That's just the nature of being human beings, I guess. You can't get on with everybody. You can't please everybody, no matter what the sport.
And I think you're going to be especially split at the moment when, let's be honest, there's a lot of players on defense who are going to have made a lot of money based off the fact that they played in Brian Forrest's defense. But for every one of those, there's equally the amount of offensive players that have been hurt by playing under Brian Flores. You know, let's be honest, we had the conversation. Is Mike Gesicki, we're all of the opinion most of the season that Mike Gesicki needs to be re-signed. By the end of the season, it's like, well, does he have the same worth because they're not able to use him? His value's been directly hurt by this coach's staff's inability to use him or fix the offense. I mean, even yesterday, you know, we saw the same problems yesterday on offense that we've seen all season long. Jalen Waddle gets a couple of passes to start the game, kind of ignored afterwards. You know, we've seen it with Duke Johnson. We've seen it because basically seen it with every offensive player that's at any stage started to play well. They have then been kind of taken out of the game. I don't know. I don't, you know, we said it earlier in the year. Is this some sort of petulance where, you know, if I show that we're good enough to win, but not good enough, I'll get, we'll get a different quarterback. I don't know. You know, because we've also seen this team play far too well to be in the position that they were in. I mean, I would make the argument. I mean, we were talking about obviously Tua yesterday for the impressive job that they did in getting this defense turned around and playing well. He has been inaccurate the last 3 to 4 weeks. Which he's never been in all the time he's been the Dolphins quarterback, he's been accurate. The last 3 or 4 weeks, he started spraying balls all over the place. Like, they've done a bad job with the entire offense. There's no, there's no getting around it. And I just think we all know that's what the teams revolve around. So, you know, I think it's important that you get that right. We know that Ross wanted Tua in the first place, and I think is probably playing into it quite a bit at this stage.
Yeah, just going back slightly, sorry, to the what the players were saying as well. Right. I've just seen it. He's like, no, it's fine, mate. No, I've just seen it on my screen and thought I'd say it, but seeing Xavier and Howard getting involved as well, saying it's easy to point the finger at others when you're not happy yourself. Very cryptic, but that doesn't appear to be. Thanks, coach. You did loads for my career.
That could be, he thinks Stephen Ross is pointing the finger at the wrong person by firing Flores, or it could be that Flores is pointing, you know, that the team are pointing the finger when he was trying to get more money earlier in the year.
Interesting. There you go. Two sides to every argument presented by Lee there. you hit on this just now as well, just to move us on slightly. What does this actually mean for the quarterback then? Because it immediately sparked that question as soon as the news came out, and you know, everyone's initial thought seemed to be, oh, this is it for Tua, Ross is going to go and get his guy. But as we kind of peeled back the layers slightly, it kind of seems like it could be completely the opposite And it was, I saw one of the beat writers, I think Joe Shad, saying that there was more to the fact that Tua didn't start earlier in the season when, and he was absolutely fine finger-wise. You know, the game where he came off the bench, you kind of hearing now from Armando, which appears to be different to what we've heard all year, that Stephen Ross put a stop to the trade for Deshaun Watson, and Flores was keen for that. It all seems to be kind of U-turning and about face, and Tua seems to be, you know, getting another opportunity, or getting the opportunity to continue in Miami. What's your immediate take on what it means for Tua then, Ty?
I think you just got to shuffle that noise out, because I'm sure they will in the organisation. And we, as fans, have just got to do it as well, because we get so much information or fake news thrown our way. You just can't separate the wood from the trees in a lot of this stuff. So I think it's important. The only way we're going to know for sure is in which terms of which direction the team go at the quarterback position is when the new coach is appointed, and they either stick with Tua, or he comes out and says, Tua's my guy, we're going to ride with Tua, or he doesn't say that. And if he doesn't say that, then maybe you can get an inkling what his thoughts are. I mean, Ross has already come out today and said that the new coach will pick his quarterback. They won't get involved. But I think Lee said as well, didn't you, early on our chat, that as they interview for the new coaches, they may say, we're going to go after Watson. If you're on board with this, great. If not, thanks, but no thanks. So, but we're never going to know that.
Interesting, isn't it? It's this is what's going to dominate the debate for the next few weeks. I think it will dominate the debate of who the head coach should be as well. So, I mean, Lee, what do you think it means for Tua, if anything? And do you think that, you know, as we kind of alluded to there, as we were talking about earlier, do you think that Tua is going to be the kind of key piece in the recruitment of the next guy?
I think it is. I think this is solely because Steve Ross got the guy he wanted and isn't seeing the guy that he thought he was getting. And, you know, I truly believe it's because the team has been poorly built around his skill set. Like, he's limited in certain areas, but he was in college. You knew what you were buying, and that was absolutely fine. You know he's short. You know he doesn't have the biggest arm. Like, all these things are fine, but you knew before you drafted, they're not surprises. Which meant you knew you had to build a team that could operate with that guy at quarterback. And you failed to do it, because the only thing you really changed was you brought in Jalen Waddle after seeing Tua play in this offense last year. So I think it's got a lot to do with it. Let's be honest, if we were happy that Flores has got the defense turned around, we're happy with the way, when the defense is playing well, that they, with the way they've played in the last 2 years. And that's what our main concern is with Flores being let go. It's all defensive related. It's not nothing to do with the offense. But then the easiest way would have been to keep Flores and just get a new quarterback, which is more than capable of doing. If you want Watson, you can get that done now. Like, there's nothing to stop. You've got draft picks. You've got plenty of cap space. You can get it done. There's also the rumors that Wilson and Rodgers are both beyond the market. If you want another starting quarterback in the NFL, there is absolutely nothing that should be able to stop you getting that done in this offseason. So it leads me to believe that's why this has happened. Now, I know that obviously not everyone's going to agree that that's a the right thing or a good thing, but that's just what that's the way I'm connecting the dots. That's how I see it. I mean, I don't think you'd want to risk giving up this defense for anything else.
Yeah. Interesting, man. Very interesting. And that's, it's going to be the dominant question, isn't it? Let's not make any bones about it. Whoever gets the job, it's going to be the first question they're asked as soon as they sit in that press conference. And it's going to dog them all summer long until they come out and equivocally say either way. Like, we were calling for that earlier in the year, weren't we? If they weren't going to trade for Watson, just come out and say it. But I wonder if the new regime will see that and take it on board.
It was definitely interesting as well with the way that Flores, if, you know, we guessed at the time, and you do the best you can to kind of make sense of things. But looking back on it now, the story that Tua wanted to play in the Raiders game before getting put on IR, and that Tua was upset with not being able to play, And then everyone was confused at the time with him not playing in that Ravens game. But because he came in and won the game, it kind of gets a bit forgotten about. But it was always, well, if he's good enough to be the backup, why is he not good enough to play? And that was the second game in a row that they'd done that. And you try and explain it away, but when you look back at it, it's, well, he obviously doesn't want him to play.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Grizz, way of trying to offset Brian Flores' dislike, possible dislike for the quarterback, was to bring in someone who's clearly not as good enough to start behind it. Because on the face, you know, knowing what we know now, Jacoby Brissett is a downgrade on Ryan Fitzpatrick, which took out of the equation the possibility of starting Ryan Fitzpatrick over a tour. I don't know. You know, obviously guesswork.
Yeah, it's interesting to say. I mean, I obviously I've seen Jacoby Brissett play now, but I think the perception of Jacoby Brissett has changed so much this season, because I think when he arrived, you know, if he'd totally been injured all season, at the start of the season, I think a lot of people, like myself, would have been like, we've been out, we've got the best backup on the market, and now it's like the back end of it. So, yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Oh, yeah. But I think that perception of Brissett is literally like chalk and cheese now, isn't it? Because that guy is going to struggle to get, like, you know, over $1.5 million deal for a year next year based on his performances this year, which is another testament to Miami's offensive sort of coordinators and performance, really, I guess. Also, quick tip on Tua. To me, it's looking like it could be the guy next year. Go and buy his sports cards now. They're dirt cheap. I was looking online earlier, and the cheapest they've been for ages, because people thinking, you know, he's gone. Pick him up and just flip him. In like a couple of months when they come out and say he's the guy, flip him. There you go. There's some sports card advice for you. And so you're going to say, what if he's not the guy? And don't listen to me. It's fine. But that's my advice.
Hey, what sports card got to do with Tua?
Oh, go and pick up Tua's like autographed sports cards. Your mate, like,
oh cards. I thought you meant cards.
That's my accent, to be fair. But also, Jeremy, if you can get a sports car with Tua's face on it, don't buy that. That seems like a bad purchase. Like,
you wait until I come back in a sports car tomorrow. And yeah. Watch this. Why have you bought that? So, well, Andy told me that if I can get a sports car right now, I'll do it.
I mean, fair play, but that would be excellent. I'd be very happy with that. Anyway, candidates then. This is the exciting bit. And as much as I still don't know whether to think good things or bad things about Brian Flores, but the exciting bit is the candidates, the possible future of the Dolphins here. And there's plenty of names. I was going to lead off on Jim Harbaugh, but I actually feel like we can take Stephen Ross on his word. And that's a very good call from you, Si. You said it over the weekend. You didn't think he'd come because he wouldn't want to rip him away from Michigan. Feels like that's out of the question. But that would be an interesting first topic. So, Lee, I'm going to fire at you.
Wait, what?
You're Chris Greer. Who are you going to pick up as your guy? Who are you going to interview, at least?
I'm interviewing everyone. Everyone that I'll be honest. I was told on this, but you know, when we spoke about the possibility of moving on from Flores earlier in the season, I said I only want an experienced coach, and I don't think I've changed off of that. I don't want a first-time head coach. Like, we've just had enough and it's not working. So let's try something different. Whether that's the right thing to do or not, I don't know. And I don't know how much better those options are, is the problem. I think from a first-time head coach point of view, and I know, you know, there's plenty of people being bandied around. Eric Bieniemy is going to be bandied around like he is every single year. Must be the single worst interviewer in the history of the NFL, because that guy can't get a head coaching job for love nor money. And I don't know what it is, because maybe these people just really think it is Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and he's got nothing to do with it. I don't know, but...
Maybe he's the enemy.
That's epic. But I'll be honest, I think probably the top name on my list would probably be Brian Daboll as a first-time head coach. I think, obviously, the connection back to Alabama would be there. And for, to be honest, I'm going to go the same again. For a experienced head coach, I'm putting Bill O'Brien back on that list. And I know people are going to be angry and probably a bunch of people just switched off because they're calling me an idiot. But I mean, I still think Bill O'Brien, the head coach, is not a bad head coach. I think Bill O'Brien, the GM, got Bill O'Brien, the head coach, sacked. And, you know, we all remember the terrible trades that he made, but that wasn't Bill the coach. That's Bill the, you know, playing fantasy football like an idiot. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely wanted to have them in and talk to them. I think, you know, I think it helps as well that Bill O'Brien's gone back to college and again is doing well. Yes, it's with Alabama. Yes, they have superior talent to a lot of the teams they're playing, but you still have to go out and get it done. I don't think that can be completely overlooked. And he has a history of doing fairly well in the NFL. Let's be honest, those Texan teams made the playoffs with him, won some playoff games. I don't know. I've gone with two offensive guys, and that's not necessarily on purpose, but it's because I just coming back to what I said before, my entire goal is to find out if I have a 15-year quarterback or not, and nothing else to me matters right now.
Good stuff. Lots of good points there. It's fine. Si, you were convinced by any of that or anyone else that you'd be bringing in?
We missed the playoffs by, half a game? And if you were to look for a coach who could improve on the season by a game or to effectively get yourselves to a level where you're going to get in the playoffs, you're more likely to do that, I think, with a veteran coach that you know what you're going to get, rather than risking it with a new coach who's got no experience and you just don't know how it's going to pan out. So I think I'm along the lines of getting somebody in with experience who can inch them a half a game or game or two higher than they're currently playing at in terms of their end of season record. And names such as Doug Peterson immediately spring to mind, who's been there, done it, got the T-shirt, won the Super Bowl with the Eagles. He's got connections with the Dolphins already. He's friends with Marino. So somebody like that, he's obviously offensive-minded as well. Somebody who like that, who would tick all of the boxes, who has got that ability to take them up another level or two in terms of the number of games won in a season. Because let's face it, they're not very far away. Yes, they've got a lot of flaws and a lot of issues to address, but they only missed the playoffs by half a game at the end of the day. So they're not too far away. And as I said, you're more likely to get that improvement with a veteran offensive coach that you know what you're going to get, rather than somebody who's got no experience and you just don't know whether it's going to work or not.
Yeah. No, I think you're completely right. For me, I think that the Doug Peterson shout just makes too much sense to me. I think you look at the way he kind of managed to get the best out of Carson Wentz and might have ended up being his downfall as well. But, you know, that kind of experience would be really, really helpful with Tua. And especially if, you know, I think with the veteran head coach as well, they've got the kind of, they can have a pull over some of those veteran players as well. And I've got no doubt that whoever the Dolphin brings in is going to go and spend a lot of cash in free agency. And so it's someone that needs to be able to command that respect immediately, I think. And that's where your veteran coach comes in. If they do go first time head coach, I'm really interested to see if they'll interview Kevin O'Connor from the Rams. He's worked with quarterbacks for his entire coaching career. He's now the offensive coordinator there. That'd interest me, and get someone a bit out of the division. One of the kind of new school offensive minds would be interesting to see what he could do with Tua and the RPO game especially. So, yeah, lots of interesting choices. One name I just want to get your thoughts on, both. I'm seeing it like crop up, and I don't know how I feel about it too much. Is Jim Caldwell, obviously formerly of the Lions. One of those guys that when he left the Lions, maybe like Flores, a lot of people were kind of like, oh, you know, he's done a decent job, but they should be doing better. And since then, the Lions have crashed and burned. And everyone seems to have retrospectively come to think, wow, what a coach. He's got so much out of that Lions team. So, Si, any thoughts on Jim Caldwell at all?
He's too old, personally. Whilst he might have the experience, I'm not convinced he's got that longevity in terms of what the Dolphins are looking for. And of course, he's got that backstory of his health concerns as well. And we don't know whether they're going to still be around or not. So from my perspective, he's not somebody that I would be looking at long term.
Yeah, fair enough, Lee.
Yeah, I think it's an easy one to put on the list because he was brought in at the start of Flores' tenure. But I mean, that might have been as much a Flores thing as a Dolphins thing. So, yeah, it's really, I don't know. It's really interesting. It's so up in the air. I wish I could have a more definitive answer. Wish I could say, yeah, this is the guy I want. Maybe a question for both of you. What about the coaching candidates that we interviewed last time that didn't get the job? What about a Chris Richard? You know, who seems to have been quiet on all the coaching searches the last couple of years, but was a hot name when we were interviewing him. You know, it just goes to show, doesn't it? Those guys that are hot names, you know, first-time head coaches, it doesn't take long for them to not be on anyone's radar again. It kind of comes as quickly as it goes as quickly as it comes.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Just how quickly like perceptions change, and you kind of get it every coaching cycle, and one coach out of the cycle hits. And I genuinely thought Flores was the guy from like the last time we recruited, and now he's gone. And yeah, and it's a bit like Adam Gase, isn't it? Like Adam Gase's name was still very popular when he left us and obviously got a head coaching job straight away. And now I don't even know what he's doing now. He's
coaching in high school.
That's it. So it's crazy, isn't it? That fall from grace. But
again, he had a good name in the, you know, the national media was still high on him when he got fired by the Dolphins, but we knew more because we'd seen more.
It only took them to the Jets opening press conference for them to see what we saw every week. So, yeah.
By that point, he signed on the dotted line. There's no going back.
Give no refunds.
Going back to that coaching search that you mentioned, Andy, when Flores was appointed, I remember there being quite a few good candidates all being interviewed, but the appointment of Flores, I seem to recall, came out of nowhere. He wasn't regarded as one of the favourites, and he obviously impressed at his interview. So we may see something again because it's already happened. So don't be surprised if you have your list of favourites, but they do go elsewhere. But it really depends on what Stephen Ross wants. Does he want that same risk as he inherited last time with a new coach, or as I say, does he want that experience?
I think part of Flores' problem, and probably why he's very impressive. I mean, let's be honest, when we sat and got to ask him questions in an interview, you can see how he could convince someone to run for a wall for him. I mean, he's engaged in it, he sounded completely convicted in his beliefs, and I'm sure it comes across absolutely brilliantly. And for all those reasons, and for all the way he's learned under Bill Belichick, you can equally see how it could rub people the wrong way. It's interesting because Steve Ross used that terminology as well, that different people rub different people different ways. And it's like, Bill Belichick can get away with it because he can always just stand there and point at all the trophies and say, because it works. When you have a record where you're one game under 500 for your head coaching career, it's harder to do that. Even though the players seem to be bought in, you can see how there would be times where if you're going to be a little bit close to the line in regards to the way you treat people, that people are going to be like, hey, if we want to be 500, we'll get Jeff Fisher. Do you know what I mean? You know,
There's a name.
What it does do, actually, the firing of Flores, it does allow them all that flexibility now to change as many of those offensive coaches as they want. Previously, Flores had remained in post and they'd have changed the O-line, changed the coordinator, he would have come under fire for yet more change. But now he's gone. The head coach is going to undoubtedly bring in his new guys. They've got that perfect excuse now to clean house and get the right coaches in as we wanted all along, without the fluff that would go with it, with it being Flores who decided that.
Yeah, he felt like he couldn't do right for doing wrong because he was going to have to make changes, but at the same time, everyone was going to point and say, well, that's why you've got these problems, because you keep making changes. So there's no...
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? One last question on coaching search. Then we all went around and named sort of offensive guys. But we are we definitely set on that an offensive guy is what's needed, and is there any worry that if that happens, then this defense, which has been the backbone of this Dolphins team, just crumbles? Sorry.
If you can keep the defensive coaches in place, then there's no reason why they can't maintain their current scheme and their current performance levels. Because after all, Flores was never coaching the defense, was he? according to him. So if they can keep those coaches in place, then fine, I'd be happy with that, because we know at the elite level they can play. So I think I would be looking offensively, definitely, to clean house across the board on that side of the ball, to effectively not start again, but you know what I mean, in terms of getting that development of the O-line properly sorted and ensuring that they maximise whoever the quarterback is, that they play to his strengths and surround him with the right personnel.
Do you think, based on your answer, that they will consider Josh Boyer for head coaching job?
But what offensive experience has he got? What's he going to offer offensively that Flores couldn't, for example?
If they did do that, I reckon they'd sort of go, well, you've got to take the offensive coordinator that we pick, that, you know, if we can get Doug Peterson or whatever, obviously he's not going to be, but someone with that experience. But interesting, isn't it? Because, like you say, that defensive scheme should, in theory, be able to stay.
It's going to be so Dolphins. They're going to appoint joint head coaches, aren't they? With Doug Phillips, Godsey. We have co-head coaches. That'll be so Dolphins.
Yeah, that's it. And then move Boyer to the offensive side of the ball. Go on, Lee. What do you reckon?
I would 100% have a defensive coach. I've got absolutely no problem with it, but I want one that's experienced or one that is sensible enough to know that he needs an offensive staff. And I think my comparison, and I hate this, hurts me inside to say this, but because it seems to be the go-to for everybody, but Sean McVay, the first thing he did was hire Wade Phillips. Like that is the perfect thing to do. You know what you want to do with the offense. And you know that the defense isn't something you should be tinkering with. So put someone in there who's going to do that. And it, let's be honest, wasn't going to leave for a head coaching job. So it was a long-term answer. Okay, they parted ways after a few years, but that's a great way to start. If you know, I just want someone to build a coaching staff where you can say, okay, I can see why you've appointed that person to do that job. It just makes too much sense. So yeah, I would have a defensive coach, but as I say, I agree with Simon that offense would be my first starting point, because everything evolves around the quarterback. You know, without one, you're nowhere. So I do think, this puts us in such an interesting position though, because technically we're not really any worse off than before they blew it up and went into the tank season, right? We're a middle of the road performing team that has plenty of cash to spend. And this puts Ross right back where he likes to be, where he can sign checks and make splashy moves and put the team in the spotlight. He's tried it another way. It's not really worked, but he's got a roster that he's got plenty of cash to build upon. I imagine he's going to be like a kid in a candy shop in a couple of weeks. You know, I know people won't like that, but hey, if I owned a team, that's what I'd be doing, because I've got that sort of money and I own the team I love. So
I'm all over it, mate. I'm looking forward to Jarvis Landry and Jalen Waddle opposite each other. It's going to be great.
Give us Jarvis Landry.
That's going to be fantastic. Imagine the marketing side as well. Perfect. Right, should we quickly talk about the game that managed to happen and cement our winning season amongst everything going on? Great win over the Patriots. Literally didn't feel in doubt, or did it? I don't know. So did it feel in doubt at any point? It was one of those weird ones, wasn't it?
Not at the start, but as we got towards the end, you could just see all the momentum was with the Patriots, and they were marching up and down the field, scoring points, which was a total contrast to what the Dolphins were going to be doing in terms of not being able to move a ball. So I was concerned. But it seemed fitting that they ended the season with a walk-off TD against the Patriots again, like they did in the year of the Miami Miracle. They won that game, obviously, with a walk-off TD. So it seemed fitting that the season ended that way. And I mentioned earlier, they weren't actually far off. If you think about second winning season in a row since 2002-03, 4-2 in the AFC East. And they always say, win your division games. If you can't win your division games, you're not going to get anywhere. So aside from Buffalo, they've obviously swept New England and the Jets. So they're not too far off in the whole scheme of things, given the issues that we know need addressing anyway. But I was really impressed with the way they marched down the field on the opening drive. It was, I said in their chat, it was very reminiscent of what happened on game one in week one, where Tua marched them down the field and they scored. And we all thought, great, what season this is going to be. But then, of course, they almost reverted to type, where they subsequently struggled. So from that wasn't a surprise. But at least they won in the end. So that's always great to wipe a smile off Bill Belichick's face as well. And even though Mac Jones arguably outperformed Tua, Tua's now, what, 3-0 against Belichick? And there aren't many quarterbacks that can say that.
Indeed, which is why you question why you fire the coach that can do that anyway. That's something we just discussed. Lee, your take, different game, like a kind of pressure off game, do you think, or just, you know, same as always?
Yeah, I didn't think there was any pressure. I thought, to be honest, I didn't feel like it was in doubt. I always felt like that, felt like they had a drive. And I'll be honest, I never felt like Mac Jones looked good enough to beat us on his own. I felt like, yes, we disappeared for a large part of that game. Like Simon said, completely the same way we have like for 99% of the season. But at the same time, I didn't feel like the Patriots were really stopping us. I felt like we were stopping ourselves, which meant we were always capable of putting enough together to win the game. I mean, obviously, that comes off the back of getting a pick six on, you know, on the opening Patriots drive. But it's winning football. You know, if we played this way in the first game of the season, we would have been even more excited than we were, you know, because we'd say we can play better than this. And, you know, and arguably we should have won by more. But yeah, just going back to something Si said as well, very fitting, isn't it, that the Dolphins end on a walk-off touchdown? But it's also exactly the same way that the Flores era started, because that was his last play before being the Dolphins head coach.
There you go.
So
there you go. Well, Si, your thoughts on the quarterback's performance yesterday? Which I think Lee got annoyed with me in the chat. I think I like talking about the quarterback in the chat. but your thoughts on his performance?
Well, he was mediocre again, to be honest. He didn't, apart from that first drive where he marched them down the field quite easily, he looked really, really good. And apart from those two runs that he had towards the end of the game, which effectively sealed the win, I thought he was very average, and that's been par for the course over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Maybe things just came to a head internally. He wasn't anything special yesterday, I didn't think.
Yeah, I thought there was three dropped interceptions which could have obviously changed the game, but they didn't, which is the point Lee made to me yesterday. Now, so clearly, he said, but did they pick them off? I was like, well, no, and he's like, there's your accident. So anyway, we got there between us. But to be honest, what was it? The runs were really kind of like they swung the momentum back, didn't they? And that's something I was going to ask you both before this, the Flores stuff happened. Is that something that we need to see a bit more from Tua? Because you just kind of grabbed the game by the balls and just dragged it forward. And I don't know why we've not, obviously there's injury stuff and everything, but we've not seen it all year. And it reminded me of the Cardinals game where he just needed to get it done on his own. He did it. And that's why a lot of people can still buy into Tua as the guy, because there's moments like that where it just goes off script and gets it done. But I mean, so, Lee, why do you think we've not seen more of that?
Because I think they're truly playing the way Brian Flores wants them to play. Do what I tell you to do, and it will result in a win or a loss. But you do what I tell you to do. You play within the structure of what the way I've decided to build this team, which is absolutely fine if it results in winning. But I don't think it necessarily gets the best out of your players. I think that's why we've seen we've seen an awful lot of players, even on the O-line, right? Not necessarily good players, but players that didn't get a chance weren't even close to being considered starters in Miami, starting on other O-lines across the league this year. I just think it's an indictment of, we need you to do what we tell you to do. Because that's what, let's be honest, that's what Mac Jones is doing. That's what Tom Brady's brilliant at, is, you know, is doing what the system is designed to do. And I'm not saying this is a system quarterback. I'm saying, you know, you are part of this, this engine. Everything needs to do its part for it to run smoothly. I think that's probably what we're seeing out to us. Why we're not seeing as many deep shots, but then when they start calling deep shots, we can complain because we don't have players to run those routes. Like, we don't get separation. That's so deep, you know, throwing loads of deep balls is just not really a sensible thing to do, you know. And I just think we see him play within in the system, and like you say, that's why you get these moments of, I'm guessing he's just saying, like, F it, I'm, you know, got to do something. You know, we saw it in the first game of the season when he changed a run call to a pass play to basically ice the game. That, like you say, that's what gives Tua fans hope.
I don't think, whilst those sorts of runs, they get Tua pumped, they get the crowd pumped, they give the offense some momentum in that particular moment. I don't think it's sustainable long term, because that's not what you want your quarterback to be doing on a regular basis. So I think whilst it was great to see it at the time in terms of scheduling that sort of thing, I don't think they ought to be doing that too.
No, not at all. That's not really what I was saying, really. It's more just that those two times a game where you're either going to go three and out, or your quarterback like bursts through the line and gets it. We've just not seen that all year. And that probably is the offensive line, really, that's not kind of creating the gap for him to do it. But like I said, I honestly couldn't tell you a time before yesterday where he's done that since that Cardinals game. And I remember that in that Cardinals game, you know, he was ducking tackles and getting, and that was when we were at our peak of the tour, sort of, this is the guy. And it just strikes me as something he could, like, you know, if we saw more of it, maybe we'd, like, a few more of us would be bought into and sort of thing. But, that was more important there. Yeah.
I think it's also important that you show it off, because teams need to know that he can do it. Might not want to do it. You might, that's not plan A or B or C. But if everything breaks down, he's capable of doing enough to keep drives going and scare defenders into, well, if it, you know, it's run pass, and one of the options is him. Do you know what I mean? It's got to be in the back of your mind for the entire game that if he decides to, he can pull off a 30-yard run. Do you know what I mean? You haven't got to be Cam Newton or Lamar Jackson or Michael Vick, do you know what I mean? But you see even the most statuesque quarterbacks manage to pull it off. And it's a really important part of the game. And I think, like you say, you need to see more of it. He's capable of it. And this offense lacks so many things that maybe we should have seen it a little more. I'm not a fan of running him up the gut, that's for damn sure. But
yeah, it was exciting when we saw it, wasn't it? Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. Another thing, we saw Duke Johnson just again taking over a game. If it's not Duke Johnson next season, it's just got to be another back of that caliber in terms of size, strength, hasn't it? I do wonder whether Jordan Howard kind of burned this coaching staff. Obviously, it's probably on its way out in its entirety on the offensive side, but I do wonder whether Jordan Howard just scared them off and it was just a bad taste in the mouth, and they've learned the lesson too late. Because, as I said on Twitter, as I said to you guys, I think we'd be looking at a different season, different outcome if we just established a run from game one with Duke Johnson or another back again of the same size, build, etc. So it's a real shame, isn't it, Si, that we didn't do it all year.
Yeah, one thing does concern me about, I mean, there's no doubting that he's been a breath of fresh air. And he's kick-started that running game, and he's looked really good, and he deserves to be kept on next year. The only thing that concerns me is that he's doing it while he's fresh, and he's not doing it. He hasn't done it over a 16-game season. He's only been with the team for, what, 5 games? And he hasn't played much before that, so he's relatively fresh in terms of his body. So my only concern is how durable is he to be able to last over a 17-game season. So I don't know if he can do it all himself. So they still may look to give him some support. Arguably, Philip Lindsay may be that support. But other than that, yeah, he's fully deserving of an extension next year, at least.
I'd happily bring Lindsay and Johnson back for sure. But I think for all, you know, the amount of times that I've sat here and said they do not value running backs, that's all just gone out the window because you fired the coach. And now you're back to, if there's a running back on the board that makes sense, that he's going to be a Dolphin. Do you know what I mean? If there's one in free agency that they want, that they're going to go after it. Now, if they really want to trade for, if the reports are true that Christian McCaffrey might be available, that's a Stephen Ross thing to go do. Go and get me that guy. Not saying I would do it, but do you know what I mean? Like, you can see, I think all those things are back on the table. Whereas I think Flores was the one who's pushing, I don't value this position.
Yeah. I think you're completely right, which is why we're going to go and get Breece Hall or Tyler Goodson. It's going to be fantastic. I'm excited already.
Or Kenyon Drake.
yes, Kenyon Drake, along with Jarvis Landry. Maybe Adam Gaze back as offensive.
We're getting the band back together.
I know we're going to run in a second, but last game ball of the season, please, Si.
Tricky one, if only for the fact he got the rookie reception record, it has to be Jalen Waddle for no other reason. We haven't talked about that, but what an achievement. I don't think anyone would now question that number six pick. He's had a phenomenal season, and long may it continue, and hopefully he'll have a good career with the Dolphins. So, yeah, Jalen Waddle fully deserved this week for me.
Good shout, Lee.
Just back onto my rant about terrible commentary. They showed the records that were broken yesterday in the NFL on Sunday Night Football, but didn't show Jalen Waddle. What a surprise. Showed TJ Watt and Tom Brady breaking records, didn't show Jalen Waddle. And he did it in 16 games rather than 17. Truly well deserved. I'm going to give it to, just to be different, Xavier Howard, because I think that pick just ended the game right where it was. I think, it kind of made the result kind of inevitable. And let's be honest, he's been great all year for all the hassle there was before the season. Been terrific again.
Good stuff. Yeah, I was going to go the same way with Howard, actually. I think, just expose Jones's decision making for what it is as a standalone feature. So hopefully the Patriots get knocked out of the playoffs very quickly next week. And the only other question I've got for all of you is, who wins the playoffs? One word answer. Go on, Si. Who wins the Super Bowl? Sorry, who wins the playoffs? Go on.
Greenpad.
Lee.
Well, that's two words, but
Tennessee.
Oh, you're just on Tannehill train, yeah. Aren't you, mate? But I'm going to go for the Bengals. There you go. There's an out of town trench, and that would really sort of rub up the draft class fan of who wants to debate that. Joe.
I love the fact that you're thinking of ways that our offseason could possibly get more annoying.
Nah, it's I just really like that Bengals offense. I think it's everything that I want the Dolphins to be, but such is life. Well, thanks for listening, guys. More drama to come. I'm sure this is going to be a very fun offseason, so stick with us. We'll discuss it every step of the way.